Thank you. It's going on. Okay, yeah, there we are. Okay, this talk is, as you can see, on work that I did with my PhD students and numerous other colleagues on water from a solute transport in heterogeneous soils. And since we're in the Netherlands, I focus on downward fluxes. We have plenty of that. And it will also explicitly take into account the spatial redistribution of solutes. And the talk is divided in three parts. How can we observe this? How can we quantitatively describe this? And what can we learn from it? I have to warn, though, that Rien figures only indirectly in this talk. Basically, if you read the slide, you understand that had I not bumped into Rien about 20 years ago, much of this research, if any, would have been done. At least not by me. So it's not much of a justification, but it's all I can have, that I can offer at the moment. Back to the contents of the talk, the seeing bit. If you want to look at solute transport in space and time, you obviously need to measure at numerous locations. Now you can dig in a number of suction cups or zero tension lysimeters. I don't like either very much. I'm not going to discuss that. But later on, Jan Bol came along with a multi-compartment sampler that had wicks underneath them that provided a certain suction. And later on, several groups developed their own multi-compartment samplers with suctions that could actively be adjusted during the experiment. And we did that by installing tensiometers in the surrounding and making the suction follow the suction that was there in the field to minimize the disturbance of the flow field. So if you do an experiment with a multi-compartment sample, it does become difficult. You need an entire suite of sensors around it to operate the thing properly, but with current data logger technology, it is quite feasible. The work is predominantly at the beginning, getting everything set up. If you want to describe leaching, you can, of course, construct breakthrough curves. Now, I assume you are familiar with those, so I won't go into detail there. But you can also construct their spatial equivalents, which I term spatial solid distribution curves. These can be combined into the leaching surface, which will be discussed shortly. And finally, we also modified the dilution theory to work with plumes passing a given depth during a span of time. And it turns out we could learn quite a bit from that as well. So let's first start with the spatial solid distribution curve. And let me get some infiltration here. You construct it by taking the individual sampling cells that you have in your multi-compartment sampler and rank them in order of the amount of leaching that they had, then the amount of solute that they captured during the experiment. So you start with the highest leaching cell up here. There we are. And the dummy guy, the slow guy, comes in the end. So naturally, if you then plot leaching per cell, you get this curve that decreases continuously, and the cumulative curve goes like this, and the stronger the deviation from the one-to-one line of this curve, the more heterogeneous your transport process is. A nice property of this curve is that it can be fitted quite well with the beta distribution, so two parameters can quantify this curve quite effectively. Now, if you have done this ranking from high to low leaching, you can also plot the corresponding breakthrough curves of these cells. So you plot all the breakthrough curves of your multi-compartment sampler nicely next to one another. This is one comprised of 300 such breakthrough curves. This one is comprised of 100 such breakthrough curves. And instead of time, I have cumulative drainage here. Note, incidentally, that I flipped this thing around. Don't know exactly why anymore, but it's from right to left. You can scale these leaching surfaces to make the volume underneath them equal to 1. And then they effectively become bivariate distributions of the probability of a solute particle leaching at a given location at a given time. And a bivariate distribution has two marginal distributions. And it turns out that the marginal distributions are the breakthrough curve that you would have had measured had you had only one big sample collector, and the spatial solid distribution curve that we saw just a while ago. So in that establishes their equivalence as one of the marginal distributions of the leaching surface. Another tool that we developed was the dilution theory developed by Kitanidis for studying the distribution of concentrations within a solute plume. The degree of mixing within that plume determines the amount of determines the degree of dilution you have. You have two enveloping cases. This is stochastic convective flow with no dilution at all, and then the solute plume can expand and establish a greater volume for itself, but the amount of water, the volume of water inside that plume that actually contains solute, remains the same, a relatively small amount, namely the volume of water that you applied with tracer. So that's solute rich water that travels in threads and intertwines with clean water. The other side of the spectrum is highly effective lateral mixing. Where's my mouse? There. That's the advective dispersive system, where diffusion is very effective, so you have solids everywhere and concentration gradients diminish. Now, Kitanidis quantified this by taking the entropy of the solid distributions, that's the thing within the sum sign. The p's are the probabilities of a solute being at a particular place at a particular time. This is the area of a sampling cell, and this is the time interval over which the sample was taken. So this is the entropy as we modified it, because Kitanidis developed it for a groundwater plume at a particular time. And we wanted to have a plume at a particular plane traveling through it during a given time. And then this E is derived from the entropy by taking the exponential. That's Kitanidis' dilution index. So that completes the observational toolbox that we have. Now let's see what we can do if we play with them. This again is our spatial solid distribution curve. If we take an arbitrary point, that point has coordinates. And if we look at the left, where's my mouse? Oh, there we are. If we look at this part of the curve, that represents all the stream tubes that have more strongly converging flow, because these stream tubes captured more solutes than the one represented by that individual point. Therefore, if you applied your solutes uniformly, and I hope you have, they have to have had larger catchment areas at the soil surface. So this strand here, this area here, represents the fraction of the sampling area through which these more converging stream tubes exited. And this area, this here, represents the fraction of the soil surface occupied by the catchment areas of these stream tubes. And if we look at the point here, at the point the curve has a slope, and that slope gives you the degree of convergence of that individual stream tube. And that is the ratio of its inflow area, its catchment area, over its outflow area. So this curve neatly summarizes the geometry of the flow paths of the above the sampling plane, between the soil surface and the sampling plane. If you now look at the leaching surface, I could give an entire lecture about what to do with leaching surfaces, but I won't. I'll give you one example. This is a map based on the blue leaching surface that I showed you, of leaching in the space-time domain. It's a field experiment, so you see the somewhat irregularly spaced sampling intervals at the bottom. To the left are the left axis, the vertical axis, are the 100 sampling cells. And each strip denotes one physical sample, one volume of water that we extracted from the sampler. And there were 1,100 samples, and 5% of the solute was acquired in only two of them. 10% was in 5 samples. And if you look at the 50% mark, or yeah, that's this, those are these guys, they take up a little over 20% of the area, and they all leach, or virtually all, between 91 and 26 millimeters. So that's a pretty dominant section of the space-time domain for leaching. If you compare that to the last 25%, it has more than half of the sampling area available to it, and plenty of time to do so. So leaching is pretty concentrated, and maps like this make you want to think again. If you calculate a reactive transport of a sorbing solute with an average adsorption curve, because a sizable portion of the solute isn't going to see much of the soil, really. So that's an example of the analysis that you can do. If you now look at dilution, the nice part of dilution is that it has both a theoretical minimum related to the tracer volume that you apply, and a theoretical maximum, assuming perfect, complete lateral mixing. And you can scale the observed leaching. My mouse is gone again. Yeah. By dividing it by its theoretical maximum to get the number n. Now, we developed theoretical expressions for both E and M for convective dispersive and stochastic convective transport in terms of the average travel time and the standard deviation around that. Now, please don't look at these equations in too much detail. It's getting late in the day and you have a week to go. I'll show you the graphs in a minute. The point of these equations is that we can diagnose on a continuous scale from stochastic convective to convective dispersive where the solid transport is on that scale, the nature of the beast, so to speak. And we can do that now for the first time with observations at a single depth instead of at least two. And again, that's particularly useful if you have shallow groundwater tables as we do in the Netherlands. Now, this is what the curves look like if you plot them. I calibrated them on the data from the green leaching surface, and the blue guys are the theoretical lines for convective dispersive transport. The orange guys are for stochastic convective transport, and as you can see, you can calculate from your leaching surface what you had in your actual soil. That mouse keeps disappearing, and you can scale it in between the two. So that's nice. It also helps me to convey a word of warning. I'm only going to discuss part of this figure. I don't want Attila breathing in my neck. This is the M that I just calculated. By taking into account every sample of that leaching surface. And this is the M that I would have calculated if I had used one big sampler instead of the 300 cells that I had. And as you can see, you get very close to the theoretical value of 1, which is valid for convective dispersive transport. So if you have an excessive sample size, you're simply going to incorrectly conclude that you have had a convective dispersive transport mechanism. That leads me to conclude that while it is laborious to operate multi-compartment samplers, they have their uses, they have their potential for certain applications, and I think their potential is greatly enhanced by having all these tools in your toolbox to play with. And one of a few examples of what you can do with that analysis is be very careful in interpreting reactive transport. It's not only the soil chemistry, it's also the spatial configuration of the flow that can affect the sorption process. And if dilution is important, for instance, if you have concentration-dependent nonlinear processes in your soil, then you may want to consider having these small sampling cells, because averaged concentrations may just not work in that case. With this, I thank you for your attention.